Hey everybody, super quick one before we jump into today's podcast with one of my favorite people on the planet, one of my closest friends, Orla O'Flaherty. Today's episode is heavy on the hormone side of things. So talking about cortisol, estrogen, thyroid, so underactive, overactive thyroid and its effect on your metabolism, and things like testosterone for men when it comes to sex drive in particular. So I wanted to bring today's episode. It's not technically a sponsor because they're not paying me to put this up, but I've been working with a company and I have an affiliate link with a company who do all my blood work. Let's Get Checked. And I think it would be very useful for people who, at the end of today's episode, think that, right, I want to get my thyroid tested, I want to get my cortisol tested, my estrogen or my testosterone, or just vitamins or minerals. And Let's Get Checked are who I use for that. And I have a code with them that will give you 30% off any of your first-time orders. That code is KEANE30, KEANE30. And any test that you want, you can put in that code the first time you use it, and it'll give you 30% off that first time order. That's who I've been using for the last couple of years for my blood work. If you follow my Instagram page, you're probably already familiar with this, Brian_Keane_fitness, because I normally tag Let's Get Checked or explain what blood tests I'm sending off. And they're a very effective way. It's secret, it's secure, it's effectively sending it to the lab that would, where your GP or general practitioner doctor would send off. So the reason I started using them was down to a combination of time and cost effectiveness, that it just cut out the middleman. I was going to my doctor to get my blood work done, and Let's Get Checked sends it all out to your home. So it's very time efficient in terms of sending off the test. And also, if you're a bit of a data geek, it saves all your tests so that you can go back and see, you know, where your thyroid function was a year ago, or where your estrogen or testosterone was 6 months ago with your last test. And you can retest as often as you like to see if it's coming back to normality or if it's been increasing or decreasing. So I like that aspect. As I said, this episode isn't sponsored by Let's Get Checked. They're not paying for this, but they are a company I work with and I have an affiliate link. So if you use my code, I will earn a commission on that. I earn nothing otherwise. And if you don't want to use the code, feel free to, by all means, definitely go check them out if you think you'll benefit from them. And you can use that if you want the 30% off. So KEANE30, KEANE30. And today's episode goes heavy on the hormone side of things. So I wanted to link this at the beginning in case it's something that you come out very motivated on the other side and decide, right, I need to get my numbers or I need to get my tests done so that I have better feedback on so how I can lose weight in the future, or how I can improve my sex drive, or how I can improve my mood or my sleep. So all the different things we talk about in today's podcast, it will be a way to test that. So last time, code KEANE30, KEANE30, for 30% off your first time order. I'll link that in the description for today's episode. So without further ado, here we go with the podcast from the one and only Orla O'Flaherty. Enjoy. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I'm your host, Brian Keane, best-selling author of the book, The Fitness Mindset and Rewire Your Mindset, here to help you by deconstructing expert guests on all things health, fitness, and mindset. Today's guest is with one of my inner circle, one of my five people, one of my best friends on this planet, Orla O'Flaherty. And if you are, there's very few people who won't enjoy this podcast, partly because Orla has such a great way of putting information across, and she is just a fountain of knowledge when it comes to hormone balancing and just overall health and wellness in general. So I'm not going to spend too much time explaining today's episode. You will get that friend vibe from listening to it, very similar to when Paul Dermody's on the podcast or Trisha Lewis is on the podcast, people who I'm friends with in real life, who we try and connect with pretty regularly. Orla is one of my closest people, very similar to Paul. We've been friends for years and I've been dying to do this podcast with her. She has her own podcast, the Happy Hormones podcast, that I was able to help, I won't say push her into starting, but definitely a little bit of a nudge. And she's got over 80 episodes now at the time of this recording, where there's just so much value based on hormones. So we try to take some of that and channel it towards boosting sex drive, towards losing weight, and everything to do with health and wellness. So some of the topics we covered in today's episode, cortisol, estrogen, and female fat loss, and how that affects male fat loss as well. The pill, contraceptive pill, what makes it, what stops it working, which I think is an absolute must know for anybody that's sexually active, and what supplements or food can minimize the negative effects of, you know, PMS, and if you're having negative effects from the contraceptive pill, which is effectively a medication. I think both genders, for anybody female who's considering that as a birth control method, or any guys who is potentially going to be going with a female or going out or married to a female, there's a lot there that I think will be helpful. helpful. We talk about male and female sex drive, so foods and lifestyle choices that can improve that, and thyroid function, so managing underactive or overactive thyroid and its effect on your metabolism, and using food as medication when it comes to things like fertility and lifestyle change for overall health, wellness, and happiness. There's just so much in today's episode. We're definitely going to do a round two because we had topics that we were potentially going to be covered that are kind of more friend topics on when it comes to the conversations Orla and I have. But today's episode, we kept it very professional, very hormone-based. And it's probably one that I would have the notepad on your phone ready or a notepad and a pen because there is just so much valuable content in today's episode. This was a super enjoyable conversation. I learned loads from it and will be going back to listen myself because Orla is one of my go-to people when it comes to filling in my gaps in my own knowledge, especially when it comes to hormones in the body. So without further ado, here is today's podcast with the one and only, one of my five people, one of my inner circle, Orla O'Flaherty, on balancing hormones, boosting sex drive, and losing weight. Enjoy. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I am delighted to be joined today by one of my inner circle, one of my closest friends, and who I consider to be an absolute expert when it comes to hormones, cortisol, estrogen, the pill, thyroid, PMS, everything to do with women's health, even though we'll be jumping in and out of women's and men's health in today's podcast. Today's guest, Orla O'Flaherty. Orla, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me on.
Orla's shaking here in the background. A little bit of first-time nerves on the podcast, even though she's got a wicked podcast, the Happy Hormones podcast, that you've done, what, 80 episodes now?
Yeah, I think I'm up to 80, so it's going strong so far.
That's the one I send people to most regularly when it comes to anything to do with female hormones. I think you're putting on amazing content on that. Orla, before we dive into that in terms of like cortisol, estrogen, and female fat loss, which will kind of be the foundation pillar for today's podcast, and then we'll go off in different directions. Talk about your background. What kind of got you to, what's your story in terms of what got you into kind of health in general?
Yeah, okay. So my elevator pitch is it? Hate the elevator pitch. So I've been working with herbal medicine and naturopathy and nutrition for the last 6 years. And I've always had an interest in natural medicine, holistic medicine, purely from a background of not being well myself as a teenager. And it turned out that I actually had hormone imbalances, but I didn't discover that until later on in my teens. And actually in my now, I'm going to say early 30s, I'm giving my age away, but anyway.
It's technically early 30s.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I'm still in my early 30s and discovered that I actually have a thyroid condition. As well as having a thyroid condition, I have a gynecological condition known as endometriosis. So I've had loads of different loads of different avenues that I had to go down, be it with medications and whatnot. And then I discovered food, as in like food is your medicine and medicine is your food. When I started college, I can't remember what year it was, but I was very overweight. My periods were horrific. I'd had numerous surgeries. And then I started learning about food and nutrition and herbs and how certain things will actually help to fix these problems. So when I was 15, we discovered that I had endometriosis, or endometrium cysts, and the doctors put me on the pill for it to, quote unquote, balance my hormones. And I would love to say that that is the case, that the pill will balance hormones, but unfortunately, it just masked the problem. And I discovered that in my early 20s, when I decided that I wanted to come off the pill. And when I did come off the pill, my periods reverted back to how they were pre-pill. So they were absolutely horrific. And it was through that I was like, I need to find a way to fix this without having been on medication, because I just personally had a real aversion to having to be on medication to fix something. And the way I see it is there's always a root cause of something. So when there's a problem, look for the root cause. Don't try and mask it with we do need medications depending on different conditions and whatnot, but try to find the root cause and then you're going to fix the problem instead of symptomatic treatment, which I'll get into when we go further in. But that's basically why I got into natural medicine, was because I was very unwell as a teenager, physically and emotionally. That's a whole other story. And I needed something natural to help fix me. So I discovered herbs. Loved herbs. My sister's a homeopath, and I was going to go down the route of homeopathy, but I back then I was like, no, I can't do the same thing as my sister. Hindsight is 20/20 vision. But yeah, so I just decided to go with the herbs and plant-based medicine. Like 70-80% of plants are, or not plants, of medications are derived from plant chemicals. So there is the science there when it comes to plant medicine and how they work synergistically to help heal the body.
Yeah, and I've been using your herbs for a long time now, because you gave me the immune boosting herbs first, which has made a huge difference to my immune system, especially with my training load. And now more recently, we moved on to kind of some of the gut stuff that I've been working with you on. And I'm definitely going to double back into the contraceptive pill later, because I think there's a lot of misconceptions around that for people, particularly for females listening, but also for guys, because a lot of guys go out with girls or are married to females, and you know that it can be useful to have that information as well. But when it comes to food as medicine, one of the things that I love about you, your content, the podcast, Instagram, even conversations we have every time we meet up, is we talk about like painting a dead leaf green doesn't mean the tree is alive, which means get to the root cause of what's going on. Talk about food as medicine.
So food is like literally what we're putting into our body. Think of our bodies like the soil and the earth. If you have poor soil, nothing's going to grow. Our bodies are the same. What we're putting into our system is having a direct effect on our health. When it comes to processed foods, like your typical Western diet, it's laden with sugar, chemicals, pro-inflammatory compounds. This is all having negative effects on the body. Then when you're looking at your whole foods, your real foods, your fruits, your vegetables, your healthy fats, your proteins, like protein is so important. Good quality protein for hormone production and function. Like we need healthy fats, protein and carbs. Carbs specifically for the fiber content, for stripping out excess hormones from the system. We basically poop out our excess hormones, be it cortisol, estrogen, testosterone, adrenaline, or adrenaline, the works. And we need to be mindful of the foods that we are consuming, because if you have a diet of McDonald's for breakfast, lunch and dinner, you're going to have that compound effect of being unhealthy. These foods are causing health issues. These foods are causing predominantly inflammation and issues with the gut health. When we're looking at our guts, like we both know this, that happy gut, happy body, happy mood, happy everything. Or your health lies within your gut. Your immune system lies within your gut. These processed foods are destroying our gut walls. What's happening then is what's known as autotoxemia. So then more toxins are coming out into the system, coming out into the bloodstream. And then we're getting the likes of inflammation, be it through like skin conditions, acne, rashes, autoimmune conditions and autoimmunity. Again, it's all coming back to the gut. So we need to look at what it is that's going to support gut health and then overall health.
When it comes to the processed foods, you mentioned McDonald's, say breakfast, lunch and dinner. A lot of people listen to the podcast, they don't fall into that bracket, but it's an extreme example to kind of anchor the point. What are the foods from your experience that you come across that tend to quote unquote trip people up? Ones that they think, yeah, this is falls on the health spectrum, but oh, it's actually probably not, because Orla's looking at me, if anyone's watching this video on YouTube, Orla's looking at me now because I've had these conversations when I've given her my nutrition and she's like, gives me that weird look. And I'm like, oh, do go on. And she'll talk about pro-inflammatory response with oats or whatever it is based on my constitution, etc. But what are some of the ones that trip people up? And in the case of, say, oats as the example, how do you minimize the pro-inflammatory response?
Yeah. So when we're looking at food and saying a food is healthy, health is subjective. It's subjective to the person and it's subjective to the type of food. Oats are great food. They are a great source of complex carbohydrates. They're one of the best grounding foods. So wild oats is a nervine herb that I use a lot in clinic, but also food-wise, it's going to help with your nervous system. It's going to help with grounding any anxiety. It really helps with sleep. But oats actually are pro-inflammatory because they have what's known as phytates, and phytates will strip not excess but other nutrients from the food in other foods. So when you are consuming, say, your oats and your berries and peanut butter or whatever you're putting in with it, you're not actually able to absorb the other vitamins and minerals from the other foods because it's inhibiting the absorption. So it is a really good food, but you need to make sure that you're preparing it right. So you need to soak your oats minimum 12 to 24 hours, and then you need to be cooking them on the hob. Everyone's throwing everything into the microwave. It's the microwave, you're nuking your food. The radiation is just destroying all the good qualities of your food. Then you're looking at other foods. Soy is a huge one. So a lot of people are going dairy-free. Now, I am not an advocate of going dairy-free because, it all depends on the person and it all depends on their constitution. So if you're someone who can tolerate dairy, who can digest it, who can digest the proteins that are within dairy, that's fine. But if you're someone who is prone to inflammation, you're not going to be digesting those proteins properly and it's causing more inflammation within the system. So dairy, when people are going dairy-free, they're going for soy products instead. Or people who are vegan, they're going for soy products instead. And soy is a complete protein. It's great, but it's not the only complete protein. Like, we've also got hemp seeds and quinoa. When it comes to soy, soy contains phytoestrogens. And these phytoestrogens, we have what's known as your estrogen receptor cells. So everything in the body, we like, hormone-wise, it's like a lock and key mechanism. So you have your estrogen kind of floating around over here, and then you've got your phytoestrogen, which is coming in. And your phytoestrogen then is latching on to the receptor cell. And then you have your natural estrogen, which has been produced in the body, then floating around the system. And that's when we're looking at the likes of estrogen dominance or excess estrogen causing more problems, especially with your hormones. So soy, unfortunately, unless it's organic, non-GMO and fermented, I would be avoiding. That's kind of my pet peeve, is soy. And I'm sorry for anyone who is constantly eating soy and corn. Don't get me started on corn.
Yeah, we won't go into that. Q-U-O-R-N instead of C-O-R-N for anyone that's just phonetically listening. Yeah. You give me a nice little segue there, because we've talked oats, we've talked soy, but you mentioned estrogen. And what I want to touch on, and you did a really good podcast on this recently, I'll link it in the show notes for people. Talk about estrogen, cortisol, and fat loss. I was going to take this in a female perspective, but cortisol, estrogen play a role with both genders. I don't think it's female specific. So talk about cortisol, estrogen, and in general, what do you regularly see with people when it comes to those two hormones in particular in relation to fat loss?
Oh, estrogen and cortisol, when it comes to hormones, all your hormones are linked. So hormones are chemical messengers sent throughout the body to tell your body what to do. At the end of the day, we are our hormones. When it comes to estrogen, cortisol, progesterone, testosterone, they're all there for a reason. They're all there for a purpose. When I have women coming to me in clinic, especially with the likes of PMS and stuff, what I'm seeing straight away is, right, we have excess estrogen here. What's happening? Why is there excess estrogen? Why are you having all these symptoms? The likes of swollen breasts, weight gain. Why are you extremely moody, irritable, blah, blah, blah? I need to know why. I can tell people how to fix things, but I need to know the underlying reason why. When it comes to excess estrogen and cortisol, it's life right now is just so full of stress. And when we are going through stress, your cortisol levels are going through the roof. When we're looking at are two different mechanisms. We have what's known as the HPA axis and then the HPG axis. So your HPA axis is your hypothalamic, pituitary, and adrenal gland axis. That's your stress response. They're your stress hormones. Then we have the HPG axis, your hypothalamus, pituitary, and gonadal axis. So that's your sex hormones. When your HPA axis is in overdrive, it's automatically knocking off your HPG axis. Then when you're looking at the estrogen and the cortisol, we also have to look at progesterone. So when you're stressed, when your body is under a chronic stress, your body is sucking away your progesterone. Now, your progesterone is actually it's that calming hormone. It's that hormone that's going to actually make you feel good. It's a natural antidepressant. When you're stressed, your cortisol is stripping out the progesterone. And when that happens, your estrogen is automatically going up. When we're looking at estrogen and progesterone, we're looking at, it's like a weighing scales. It's like a balance. If your estrogen is up here, your progesterone is automatically going to go down and vice versa. But when our progesterone is being stripped out, then you're looking at the estrogen going higher and higher. And then you're also looking at your cortisol levels doing this loop around the body, and it's having that negative feedback loop effect with the HPA axis. I hope all that makes sense. I know it's very sciencey.
Yeah, you know, I think it's for people to understand that it's important that the hormones balance out. As you said, I think that weighing scale analogy gives a really good idea. Mm-hmm. When it comes to estrogen then and cortisol, because obviously they're all linked, as you said, it's hard to talk about one without talking about the other. What are some of the common I won't say triggers. What are some of the common setups or environments for people? Obviously, the time we're in now with the lockdowns and COVID and uncertainty, stress and cortisol is higher. I've spoken, you know, on my Instagram about this, that I would be quite a stress-free person for the most part. Mm-hmm. I don't have things to be stressed about, but even I have anxiety around the uncertainty. It's just, it's natural with the environment we're in. Mm-hmm. But what are some of the things outside of, say, a pandemic that have an impact on people's estrogen and cortisol that you'd normally get to the root of? Again, I know it's individual to the mm-hmm. person, but you mentioned soy there on estrogen being an example. What are some of the common things that you see that people listening might be able to look at their own life and go, oh, I'm doing that, it's having a negative impact on my hormones? What jumps to mind there?
Yeah, so environmental factors straight away. So we have to look at the foods that we're consuming. We have to look at the quality of the foods that we're consuming, but not just foods. Then we're looking at cosmetics. We're looking at plastic. All these things contain what's known as xenoestrogens. So these are, they're chemicals that are, they're mimicking your estrogen within the system, like I talked about earlier, and how they're latching onto the estrogen receptor cells, and then everything's going through the system. So the likes of your food, your quality of food, you need to be eating as much organic as you possibly can, because our foods are sprayed with what's known as herbicides and pesticides. These are endocrine disruptors, and herbicides and pesticides work directly by affecting the, say, the reproductive system of pests, and then we're consuming the residual effect, or the residual chemicals that are left on our food. Like, there's what's known as the dirty dozen, and these are the foods that are sprayed massively, the likes of your broccoli, apples, carrots, berries, spinach. Okay, that's five. I can't think of the other seven on the top of my head.
But they're the ones always go organic.
Always go organic, yeah. So even just Google your dirty dozen and then your 15 clean. And so there's 15 clean, which aren't sprayed as heavily and also have that protective outer coating, which are beneficial for reducing the amount of chemicals that are getting through to the food.
Explain endocrine disruptors just for people that are listening that are unfamiliar with it.
So an endocrine disruptor is a chemical that's coming into the system and it's knocking off your either your HPA or your HPG axis. It's literally coming in like a block, like a barrier, and it's stopping the natural secretion of your natural hormones. So again, the likes of BPAs and phthalates, which are in plastics, and then your herbicides, your pesticides, your antibiotics, and growth hormones that are in your meat and in your fish. Specifically, you're going to hate me for this, but specifically salmon, unless you're buying wild salmon, they're pumped with antibiotics and they're having a really bad knock-on effect on our health. And so many people think that they're being healthy by eating salmon, unless it's wild. Like, even if you're buying organic, it doesn't make a blind bit of difference, because it's the amount of sea lice that is on salmon, even though they're given quote unquote technically organic friendly antibiotics, they're still being given something to kill off the sea lice if they're farmed. So it's being mindful of those things. Sorry.
Yeah, salmon is my food that Orla said you should stop eating this. I'm like, it's my favorite food though, Orla.
I know.
But so I take my hit on my salmon, because it's tricky to get wild salmon.
It's very hard to get wild salmon. Unless you know someone who's like, I'm very lucky. I have two uncles who fish, so I can get wild salmon and trout not as much as I want, but often enough when it's in season. Sorry, just to throw that one in.
We'll talk after some black market salmon dealing after this. Talk about sex drive. Because I think hormones, when we think hormones, a lot of us, myself included, we think sex drive, because that's where your mind goes with it. Talk about boosting your sex drive.
There's loads of different ways of boosting your sex drive. But before you look at how to boost it, you have to ask yourself, why is your sex drive low? What's happening there? When it comes to women, predominantly, there's an issue with their estrogen testosterone. There's not enough, your estrogen isn't rising enough and your testosterone levels aren't actually being activated. And then when it comes to men, we're looking at two things. We're looking at, again, low testosterone levels. That's predominantly in men who are over 45, men under 45 with low sex drive. We're usually looking at some form of psychological issue there. With women who are on the pill, you're automatically going to have a lowered sex drive. It's on the pill insert that this will affect your libido. And that is because, again, you're getting a steady stream of synthetic hormones, of synthetic estrogen and progesterone if you're on the combination pill. And this is knocking off your natural estrogen surge and your natural testosterone surge as well. So then looking at things to help that, if you're not on the pill and you have a low sex drive, again, you have to look at the different factors. Is it psychological? Is it physical? Is it hormonal? And if it is hormonal, how is it that you can raise your testosterone levels? How is it that you can raise your estrogen levels and again balance out the estrogen progesterone combination? But certain foods are really good for boosting testosterone, the likes of button mushrooms, strawberries, cherries, dark chocolate, oysters. I know they're not really tasty, but my opinion. And then maca powder as well. Maca powder is a really good adaptogenic herb for increasing your sex drive. But again, with maca powder, you got to look at the person. If you are someone who has any sort of estrogenic conditions, you have to stay away from maca powder, because it does contain phytoestrogens and it's going to exacerbate any estrogenic problems that you do have. So again, being mindful of the person and what it is that is going to be healthy for you.
Explain adaptogens for people.
So an adaptogenic herb is it's a herb that works directly on the adrenal glands. So again, going back to the HPA axis, and that helps to helps the body to manage the stress hormones better. So it's reducing that cortisol dump and that adrenaline and noradrenaline dump.
When it comes to the pill, what are the major misconceptions around the pill in relation to hormones? The contraceptive pill, particularly the one I'm talking about now.
Yeah. The biggest one, now, I have to be very diplomatic and mindful on how I say this next part.
It goes out to thousands of people. Be mindful so you don't get all the hate on all the comments.
When it comes to the pill, I love and hate the pill. The pill has given women body autonomy. It has given them a chance to live their lives without getting pregnant when they didn't want to get pregnant. That in itself is huge when it comes to overall female health and wellness. But what people don't realise is that with the pill comes a whole host of side effects. All you have to do is look at the insert of the side effects of the pill.
It's as long as your arm.
Oh my God, it's massive. And it ranges from headaches, bloating, mood disorders, suicidal thoughts on even some of the pills. So you really have to be mindful. But the thing is that a lot of women are put on the pill to, again, quote unquote, balance your hormones. No hate to GPs at all, because I understand that GPs have worked their arses off for years to be able to help people. All they want to do is help people. And some GPs have even said this to me, that they're not given the information. They're being told, right, here's a problem, here are the symptoms, here's the treatment plan. Again, that's going into
Western medicine.
It's Western medicine. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's symptomatic treatment. But the pill is switching off your natural hormone secretion, so your natural ovulatory cycle. Once you start taking the pill, you're stopping ovulation. Once ovulation is stopped, the rest of your hormones there's that knock-on effect, that domino effect. So when you are given the pill to balance hormones or to fix a problem, you're not actually fixing the problem. You're masking it. And then once you, say, come off the pill in years down the line to try and conceive, if you're someone who had gynecological conditions before the pill, expect those issues to come back. So those problems have only been masked for a short period of time and they will come back. Now, to be honest, Brian, it's something that it really gets to me, because in clinic, I'm sitting across from women and they didn't know this. They were told, right, you're being put on the pill, you're going to fix this problem and everything's going to be fine. And then when they're in their early to mid 30s, they come off the pill and they're trying to conceive, and it's one of their biggest life dreams is to have a baby, and they're sitting across from me 2 years of trying and they can't, because they actually have either PCOS or endometriosis or some gynecological problem there, but it was never actually fixed. The root cause was never...
And it compounded over the years with a mass problem.
Yeah, and sitting across from women, just it's devastating for them. So that's why I have real issues when it comes to the pill. But at the same time, I understand, like, I was on the pill from when I was 16 to 23. And it was great because I didn't get pregnant when I had my first boyfriend, and was like, you know, it served its purpose. So it was great. But it wasn't then until I realized that, right, I came off the pill and I'm like, right, my issues haven't been fixed. My endometriosis isn't gone. My cysts are all coming back. Like, that hasn't been fixed. So we need to look at the underlying issues.
I'm going to double back on that for sure in terms of the pregnancy cases, because I think some of the messages you get, I've seen some of the lovely messages that people send you. So I do want to pull that because I think it's valuable for people. But one of the most interesting conversations we had on a professional level, because we talk so regularly, mm-hmm. as you're one of my five people, we're always chatting, yeah. But about minimizing the side effects of the pill. Mm-hmm. That was something that I had definite gap in my knowledge on, mm-hmm. as a nutritionist and yeah. as a professional. Talk about some of the supplements and food choices when it comes to the contraceptive pill, about how do you manage and minimize the downside? Because I think that's a very valuable thing for girls listening, females listening, and in a very politically correct way of saying this, for the guys who want to keep their girlfriends or wives' hormones balanced to avoid...
who don't want to get thrown into a wall.
Pretty much, yeah. Right. Or instead of not me. Talk about how to minimize the side effects or the negative impacts of the contraceptive pill.
Yeah. So when it comes to if you're on the pill, like I will never tell a woman to come off the pill. Such an individual choice, but I will give you the information and then you make the decision yourself. If you decide to go on the pill, there's three things that you need to be taking. You need to be taking a methylated B complex, an essential fatty acid, and a probiotic. The reason for this is because the pill inhibits the absorption of your B vitamins and also your essential fatty acids. And then when you're looking at the probiotic, you need to be having the probiotic because the synthetic version of estrogen, estradiol, is having a corrosive effect on the lining of your gut wall, and it's also killing off your gut bacteria. That's why what we'll see with the pill is the likes of overgrowth and candida. So thrush is huge when it comes to the pill. So being mindful of your good gut bacteria, but your good... It's not just your good gut bacteria. We've also got what's known as a vaginal microbiome. So you need to be mindful there as well of any sort of sanitary products that you're using too. I know I'm going off on a tangent. I'm coming back. But you need the methylated B complex for your neurological pathways as well as your nervous system, and as well your essential fatty acids. Our brains are basically... it's 70 to 80% of fatty tissue. So we need healthy fats and your essential fatty acids, your omega-3s. Now, yes, we do need the full spectrum 3, 6 and 9, but predominantly your omega-3 because they're anti-inflammatory in comparison to your 6 and 9 being somewhat pro-inflammatory. And so they're your main three. Then when we're looking at foods, so food choices, again, your healthy fats, your extra virgin olive oil, your coconut oil, your avocados. Like flax and chia seed are great, but again, flax contains phytoestrogens. If you're someone with an estrogenic condition, swap out your flax for your chia seed or other seeds. Like pumpkin seeds are great. Pumpkin seeds are rich in zinc, and we need zinc for ovulatory function. If you don't have enough zinc in your system, the follicular cells, they're not going to be able to split. So that's when we're looking at...
precursor for testosterone for men, so for both genders, exactly. Zinc is very important.
Yeah. And other foods, again, like your adaptogenic foods, the likes of your oats, your root veggies, your sweet potato, your beetroot, carrot, parsnips, all these are going to help to strip out any excess cortisol that are in the system, as well as any excess estrogen. So you're pooping all the excess hormones out. You need that fiber to get rid of them. When we're looking at moods and the mood swings and everything coming up to the pill, what's happening, and again, it all depends on what type of, say, birth control that you're on. If you're on the pill, the mini pill, the...
And individual response.
And individual response, exactly. So the pill, mini pill, Mirena Coil, the Implanon, the Novaring. We're looking at what is in these things. So the combination pill, that's the likes of your estradiol and your progestin. Your PMS symptoms your PMS, it will be there, but it's not going to be as... bad. It's not that it's not going to be as bad, but when you're looking at the likes of one contraceptives where you're not getting a break, or where you're not getting that 7-day break, or you're not getting the drop off of the synthetic hormones going through the system, you're constantly, your body's trying to metabolize all these, not excess, but all these synthetic hormones through the system. So it is going to have that knock-on effect on the likes of the liver and on your gut. When we're looking at hormones, it's the liver that metabolizes excess hormones, and then it's the bowels that will excrete the excess hormones. So you really have to look at balancing your liver health and your gut health together.
Another thing that this sounds so obvious, but I was grossly unaware of, is certain supplements that are quite popular that stop the contraceptive pill working.
Yes. My favorite topic.
Please explain. I think this is this was one of these when Orla told me on just a random walk, I was like, what? Yeah. I was like, I took out a pen and a piece of paper, like figuratively. I was like, oh shit. So talk through, just because I think that's valuable for people.
Yeah. And again, as a naturopath and herbalist specifically, it grates me when I hear people recommending for women to be taking the likes of milk thistle and St. John's wort and this, that and the other. But particularly milk thistle and St. John's wort.
Because they're popular.
They're very popular. Now, St. John's wort, thankfully, now I know a lot of people out there will kill me for saying thankfully, but that has been taken off the market. Only herbalists or doctors can prescribe it. In my opinion, milk thistle should be the same. It is a great, it's a great liver herb, hepatoprotective, hepatorestorative, but it blocks what's known as the P450 pathway, and that's the pathway in the liver which metabolizes drugs and medications. Therefore, people keep forgetting that the pill is a medication. The amount of women I ask, are you on any medication? No. Are you on the pill? Oh yeah, I'm on the pill. It's like, that's a medication. So being very mindful that milk thistle, St. John's wort will stop your contraception from working and you can get caught.
Yeah, there we go. Just I think it's good, valuable for everybody listening. I know there's a few people that went back and just did the go back 30 seconds, back 60 seconds. And we're like, right, added that note to the phone. Talk about from your experience, because I know when it comes from a research standpoint and kind of anecdotal from professionals, people vary on the side of the pill and weight gain. But because you're very hormonal and obviously a hormones expert, from your experience with people, does the contraceptive pill generally cause weight gain because of, and if so, talk on what's been your experience first and then we'll go in a direction based on your answer.
Yeah, it does and it doesn't. It can do in a roundabout way. When it comes to the pill, like again, your estrogen, progesterone, estrogen is a natural appetite suppressant. So when you're going through your natural ovulatory cycle, not being on the pill, you have your normal estrogen levels and that's going to, say, suppress hunger. When you're on the pill, you're not getting the surges or the spikes and the peaks. So automatically your hunger may increase. But then as well, because progesterone is a natural antidepressant, when you're on the pill, you're lacking that rise in progesterone as well. And what can happen a lot of the time is, look, we're all human. We can comfort eat, we can comfort drink, we can do all these things. So if we're in a chronic low mood, because of the pill, and again, one of the side effects of the pill is mood disorder, you're going to be reaching for food and you're going to be overeating then. Like, the only thing really that causes weight gain is excess calories. We know this, but it's like the knock-on effect that it's having.
That's a great answer, because that gives me a perfect kind of segue into what I want to touch on, which is losing weight and the effect that hormones have on weight loss. From your experience, when it comes to people trying to lose weight, mm-hmm. and I've seen this with people you work with, weight release, where mm-hmm. they change their lifestyle, change their nutrition, you give them the herbs, and they end up losing weight nearly as a side benefit mm-hmm. of a nutritional plan or a lifestyle change. When it comes to losing weight and your hormones, is it a case, as you mentioned there, too many calories equals, you know, weight gain, calorie deficit equals weight loss? It's, for the most part, 99 of 100 cases, it's that simple. But what impact do hormones have on that?
Yeah, well, there is an impact of your hormones on your weight. Like, the whole calories in, calories out, the only thing that's going to make you gain weight is excess calories. That is true.
Asterisks.
Yes, to a degree. But then your hormones do come into play as well. Your hormones are a massive, play in this, because when we're looking at hormones, again, we're looking at the likes of your thyroid. Your thyroid is what controls your metabolism. Right now, specifically, when you're looking at women, when I say women, because predominantly thyroid issues do affect women more so than men, there's that like 3-to-1 ratio. But if there's something off with your thyroid, specifically low thyroid is more common than overactive thyroid. But your metabolism is going to be on the floor, so you're not actually going to be able to be burning these calories. So say, again, you and I both know this isn't true, but quote unquote, you're meant to have your 2000 calories a day. It's different for every person, blah, blah, blah. When it comes to someone who has a low functioning thyroid, that's going to be completely different. They may not be able to metabolize anything over 1000 calories. So you need to be mindful of that as well. And then again, your cortisol, excess cortisol in the system, you're going to be looking at hanging on to weight because of inflammation. Your body's in fight or flight. Again, this is going back to sort of say environmental, not environmental, but evolutionary purposes of you're in fight or flight, your body's going to retain that little bit extra fat so that it can survive.
Yeah, basic survival mechanism.
Yeah. So it's just looking at, yes, hormones will affect the likes of your weight loss and your weight gain as well.
Talk about thyroid.
Ooh, where to start?
I know, I'm aware this is a Pandora's box because you literally have a fire hose of knowledge when it comes to thyroid. The most common, talk about thyroid issues in general. You said they're underactive, overactive, mm-hmm. and how they're kind of two different issues. Mm-hmm. What do you generally see more of? And from your experience, what tends to be, I won't say the causes because it's a multitude, like again, talk about Pandora's box.
Yeah.
But from your experience, what are some of the common trends, I suppose, mm-hmm. amongst clients and amongst people that is worth considering and looking out for if you're a female, particularly female, as you mentioned, thyroid, mm-hmm. it can be men, but it's predominantly a female issue from my experience as well, professionally. Yeah. What are the common trends and what do you see more often? Lower, underactive, overactive? What's your...
In clinic, I see more underactive heading into Hashimoto's disease.
And what does that look like?
So what you're looking at with underactive thyroid is, again, weight gain, lethargy, being absolutely exhausted, bulging eyes, really, really low mood. Think of someone who's just like in a bed. Think of someone who's like chronically depressed and doesn't want to get out of a bed. And they have extreme hunger, but can't metabolize their food or can't metabolize their calories. And again, different causes. First, what can happen is that someone may start out with an overactive thyroid. But it's been overactive for so long. With overactive thyroid, you're looking at, again, your stress hormones, your cortisol and your adrenaline constantly being pumped out. And when that's happening over a long period of time, you're having the compound effect of the likes of adrenal fatigue, chronic fatigue. When you're going like that for so long, then you're going to get the crash and then you're going into the hypo. So you can start off hyper and then come back around. Or come back over to hypo.
Is that common?
That's very common. And then it's also, you have to look at genetic factors. When it comes to thyroid, there's a lot of genetic factors. There's a lot of hereditary components at play as well. And then as well, we're actually, of course, I'm bringing it back to this, you're going to laugh. When it comes to thyroid issues as well, we're looking at a lot of traumas. So when we're looking at why traumas, because if someone goes through an extremely traumatic event, be it physically, emotional, whatever, a combination, you're getting that massive cortisol dump. So the body has just gone high and then you're coming back again into that crash.
Outside of the traumas, which I think is a whole podcast.
That's what I'm saying. We won't go there.
Potentially down the future, we'll park that one, put in the back pocket for now.
Yeah.
But when it comes to thyroid, is it similar to the hormone issues about the nutrition, the lifestyle, what you mentioned earlier?
Yes.
Or is there anything different that's thyroid specific that people need to look at?
You know, 100% nutrition is key when it comes to thyroid. When we're looking at thyroid function, there's certain foods that you have to avoid. And these are foods that would be classed as healthy foods as well.
Such as
the likes of, again, your dairy, if you're able to tolerate dairy, but if you have a thyroid condition, you can't, because the casein that's within dairy is going to have, it's latching onto your thyroid receptor cells. So it's inhibiting the thyroid function. The same with gluten. A lot of people think that the problem is gluten for like all other health conditions, whereas usually it's glyphosate, which is sprayed on crops, etc. But when it comes to thyroid function, gluten again is a protein and again is latching onto the likes of your thyroid stimulating hormone or your T3, T4 and the way that they're working. So it's having a complete inhibitory effect on your thyroid function. So gluten and dairy are really key for trying to, I'm not going to say eliminate, but at least minimalize as best as you can. So the likes of the dangers in the dose. Don't be having milk for like a bowl of cereal with milk, then 3-4 cups of coffee or tea with milk, and then in the like cheese and cottage cheese, yogurts, everything. Just look at reducing them out as much as you can.
When it comes to thyroid, do you find one of the things that I've struggled with, and I've worked for a lot of thyroid people, I've actually referred some on to you, and it's not that, even though I have a baseline knowledge on how it affects body composition, if it's affecting your life in a meaningful way, I'm like, you go to Orla, you go to an expert, you go to somebody else to sort that. From your experience, do you find that the dietary changes and some of maybe the lifestyle mm-hmm. changes we've talked about earlier, does that have a noticeable impact on thyroid? And what's the, I know it varies person to person based on their starting point. What's the kind of general starting point? My life is being really negatively affected from this to actually this is fine and manageable. Do you find there's a time period or for that?
Yeah, so when we're looking at any condition in the body, it takes 4 months to have any long-lasting physiological effects when you make changes. Be that nutrition, herbs, allopathic medicine, whatever, it will take 4 months to have that long-lasting effect. But looking again at your foods, and you're looking at thyroid dysfunction, we're looking at, again, inflammation and specifically gut-related. With most thyroid conditions, there's a lot of autoimmune conditions linked to them, or there's different types of autoimmune conditions linked to thyroid, the likes of Hashimoto's and Graves' disease. So looking at healing the gut. So if you can give yourself 4 months of antioxidant-rich foods, predominantly with thyroid, we're looking at vitamins A, C, E, K, vitamin D, selenium and zinc. These are crucial for your thyroid health.
What foods jump to mind with those foods?
Yeah, so the likes of, everyone's going to hate this, organ meats. Organ meats are really beneficial. Again, making sure that
I think we'll do a 180 on that one. I think in 15 years' time, people are going to be all about the organ meats.
Oh, but they're so beneficial. They're rich in vitamin A and vitamin K. They're crucial for overall health and wellness, be it like your skin health, your liver health, your hormone health, everything. Like, we need these foods. It's just they taste rotten. That's the only problem. Unless you make a nice chicken liver pate, which you can do. Anyway, I won't go down that road. But yeah, so looking at your antioxidant-rich foods, all your purples, all your berries, your cabbage, your beetroot, like your red cabbage and your beetroot, these all contain what's known as oligomeric proanthocyanidins. These are one of the highest anti-inflammatory substance on this planet. So that's within our food. They also contain polyphenols, which are prebiotic. So again, really good for the gut. So they are anti-inflammatory as well. Then the likes of your sweet potato, your carrots, like looking at all the different colours, the more colourful your plate, like eat the entire rainbow that's on your plate, and that's what's going to give you the benefits. Then pumpkin seeds, certain nuts, particularly walnuts and Brazil nuts, really good as well. And like all your greens, like just people, please eat your broccoli. Just eat your broccoli and your spinach and your rocket. Again, rocket contains a lot of polyphenols, really good prebiotic, really good bitter food to stimulate liver function as well. And once your liver function is stimulated, then your bowels are going to be stimulated and you're going to be pulling out all those excess toxins and excess hormones.
Talk about something that's actually had a very noticeable impact on my life in terms of increased quality of digestion, which I didn't really consider because you've given me a bitters blend, but I also use the lemon in the morning and some apple cider vinegar. Talk through what that does, because this is, when you said it to me, was literally like, I read that in a nutrition book when I qualified first and then forgot about it. Mm-hmm. And then you said it and I went, that's so obvious. Yeah. Talk about using it, say, in the morning or before meals, either a bitters blend or, in the case of very easy for people, lemon, apple cider vinegar. Talk what that does.
Yeah, so anyone with gut issues, anyone with hormone issues, even, what we need to do is we need to stimulate the liver. So anything that tastes bitter is going to secrete bile from the gallbladder, which is then going to help with secreting your digestive enzymes as well. So the likes of your rocket, your lemon water, your apple cider vinegar, anything that is going, you're going to get that bitter taste on your tongue, and then that'll start releasing the saliva from the glands. So automatically you're getting the release of your natural digestive enzymes.
Love that. I think one of the things that I've started doing, which is, again, such an obvious thing when you say it like that, is first thing in the morning with half a lemon, a little bit of hot water, and apple cider vinegar, mm-hmm. and just get the bile production done, because my digestion, particularly when my training load goes up, gets very sluggish. And that's been an absolute, something so simple has been game changing in terms of digestion through the day.
Little changes can have massive effects, but it's about knowing what little change it is and when to use it and what's going on within your body. Because even with the likes of the bitters, like the bitters blend that you have, it's take this 15 minutes before meals. It's like that, you give your body the chance then to start secreting the digestive enzymes themselves.
Talk about, I said I would double back on this just because I think this is a section that is worth skipping for the next few minutes if it has no interest of you, but it's worth listening to 50 times if it is. Talk about pregnancy cases.
Yeah.
And your experience in particular. Mm. I know this is something that even over lockdown with Zoom mm-hmm. people and people that you would work with in clinic. Yeah. Talk about, you don't have to mention any names, mm-hmm. but talk about one or two even case studies of people mm-hmm. and what has happened, because you're one of the, and I have other people that I send to other things, Paul Dermody for mm-hmm. seriously obese people, Inner Fight for people doing marathon to sob and things mm-hmm. like that, Gary House for running, people who do different things. And if I ever hear somebody going, look, I'm trying to get pregnant and mm-hmm. I can't, mm-hmm. I'm like, that's outside my area, mm-hmm. but Orla can handle that. Mm-hmm. That's your bread and butter, your baby, for the lack of a better term. Talk about that, for spend 2 or 3 minutes, 4 minutes explaining that for people who are in that boat, because I think if it's you, it gives hope to people, because when someone's trying to get pregnant, and I've been there, not firsthand, but with clients, because they've got secondary goals and they're like, look, we're trying to conceive, and some off the back of lifestyle changes, it happens, but it's more by chance than specific. Talk about that, just to kind of give people a hope who are in that boat now and are struggling, and how some lifestyle changes, some nutritional changes, some reduction in stress, because I know it's big, cortisol plays a huge role in that, mm-hmm. particularly now, pandemic, etc. Yeah. Talk about that for a bit.
Oh, I could talk about this one for hours. Infertility is huge. It's never been so prevalent at the moment than it ever has been, than it is now. And it's a topic that it breaks my heart to see, like I said earlier, it breaks my heart to see when women are coming into me and they've been on the pill for 15 years, but were never told that they have underlying conditions, and now all of a sudden they have to, they're on the clock, basically. Do you know, like we feel that when we're in our mid 30s that like we're limited time. Like we have a bit longer, we have up to like 7 or 8 years.
Especially now.
Nowadays, things are different now. But infertility is heartbreaking to watch women go through this for years. One thing that, now I can't talk about specific cases because all client confidentiality and everything, but like I can go into bits. Like I have over lockdown, the amount of text messages that I got that had just a picture of a pregnancy test with the plus sign or something.
Yeah, I was watching when a couple of them came.
And it was like the tears, like straight away, I was so happy because these women have been trying, or not just women, sorry, these couples have been trying for so long and it's all they wanted. And, but it wasn't, and like when I get the messages of, it sounds even weird saying it, oh, thank you, world. And I'm like, I didn't do it. And I was like, I gave you the information and you're the one who put that to use, and you're the one who put the work in. And it's amazing to see. It's so amazing to see people finally get their dream of becoming parents. And different lifestyle changes, again, it all depends on the person. Right now, stress is the biggest problem. The first thing I tell all my fertility cases, and it's a hard one for people to take, is to stop trying. I was like, I need you to actually stop trying for 2 to 3 months. It's like, forget about it. I'm not telling you.
That for stress reasons?
Yeah, stress reasons. Because the amount of pressure that you're putting on yourself to get pregnant can be stopping the ovulatory process. And that's down to your cortisol. When your cortisol levels are up, it's stopping ovulation. And then as well, it becomes very robotic. Like having sex at this specific time every single month, it becomes so robotic, and you just,
for the woman, me and Tommy are kind of like, we're like, oh, we're cool with that. It's like, it's fine.
How do you feel about getting
us at the same time? Do you know, you think so, you would think so, but no.
No, I'm joking.
Like,
I'm totally joking.
No, that's, I know. But even guys are like, yeah, I actually don't want this now. I am fucking sick of it. It's so robotic and the fun and the joy has gone out of it. So my first thing is to try and get women is to stop trying. I had a case recently, last week, and we were having just a phone follow-up, and she's like, Orla, my sex drive is back. I was like, yes, your sex drive is back, you actually want your husband. And she's like, oh yeah, I can't get enough of him. I'm like, this is brilliant. Yeah. And she was like, yeah, he's in the background saying thanks.
Yeah, I can imagine. I feel you'd be getting doubling over in the thank you messages for sure.
And this woman is someone who has stage 4 endometriosis, and they've been trying for years, and they stopped trying, they got rid of the stress, they got rid of the pressure, and I asked them to just try and reconnect again. So have sex if you feel like you want to have sex. And that's what they did. And 3 days later, I got a text message, I'm pregnant. and literally I'll start crying now, so I will, because I get really emotional over it. But yeah, it was just phenomenal to see that these women are trying and trying and trying, because there's what's also known as the 2 week wait, and people have never thought about the 2 week wait until they start trying. So the 2 week wait is once you've finished ovulating and you're waiting 2 weeks to find out are you pregnant, and you're on that constant cortisol, anxiety, stressful, is it there, is it going to be this month, and they're going through the 2 week wait for 1, 2, 3, 4 years. And that 2 week wait is even having a further compound effect on your stress levels. So it's you're all over the place. Then when it comes to conceiving, a lot of women, and I don't mean to be laughing, but a lot of women don't realize that, like, they're coming to me and I'm asking them, right, when are you ovulating? And they're like, I don't know. And I'm like, what do you mean you don't know? I was like, yeah, we're just trying all month. I was like, no. It's like, if you, like, an egg is only viable for 12 to 24 hours after it's been released. If you're having sex to get pregnant after that, you're hump a wall, like, you know, it's like, it's not working.
Sex for the reasons, just not for,
And then they're putting themselves under more pressure and they're having sex that they're not even enjoying, and they're ending up resenting each other as a couple. And it's like, you're having such a negative effect on yourselves here. So find out when you're ovulating, that is key. And then realize that your most fertile days are 5 days before ovulation, and then when you ovulate up until 24 hours after the egg's been released. The reason for the 5 days before is because sperm can survive in the reproductive cavity for up to 5 days. So then when that egg is released, the sperm can come, egg's there, meet, boom, baby.
Yeah, I love that. I give similar advice to one of the guys that I was working with, I sent him over to your podcast, but the same idea about ovulation. He was like, what do you mean when she's ovulating? I was like, that's when you can get pregnant. I was like, if you're going hunting bear, I'm like, don't hunt them in the winter when they're hibernating. Yeah. Like, you need to do the thing at the right time.
Exactly.
He was like, oh, that's a good point. That was the analogy I used. Typical lad analogy. And he was like, oh, I get that. Hunt the bear in the spring. So, like, would have did the job, I think, anyway. But, yeah, I think it's so useful. Order, there's just an absolute mountain of information here. And what I'm looking to do is, we were talking about this because there's so many other topics. We haven't even got into the personal stuff on freezer books and empathy and all these things that we were going to cover that we'll do on a round two. But for everybody listening, let us know what jumped out at you the most for this podcast. Hit us up on Instagram, hit me up, hit Orla up, and we'll do a round two and go deep on certain topics that you've covered, because you're just a fountain of knowledge. I remember when we first met, it was before we were friends, because it was at my business seminar when I was doing those seminars where we first met.
Yeah.
And I remember talking to him, I was like, oh my God, you were a fountain of information. And, you know, we became really good friends since. But
you're stuck with me now.
I'm stuck with you now. I'm good with that. But I think for people listening, there's just so much value here. Can you tell everybody where is the best place for them to connect with you, the podcast, Instagram, or people that want to work with you directly, either to balance out their hormones, you know, sex drive, losing weight, fertility, anything that you can serve and help people with? Give them that information now, and I'll be sure to link them in the show notes for people.
Yeah, so Instagram is the best place to get me or to follow me in my DMs, slide into my DMs. And so Instagram is Orla_naturopath_herbalist. Then Facebook, Orla Flaherty, naturopath and herbalist. I know no continuity. Business Brian's going to kill me. And Orla's Happy Hormones podcast. And I do have a website coming out soon, though. So that's going to be out.
Do you have the domain for that yet?
Yeah. So it's going to be orlaflaherty.com.
Love it. And for everybody listening, I will put those in the show notes on brankyfitness.com. They'll be linked in the description for Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher. Go check it out. Orla, as I said, like, I'll do a separate introduction at the end of this, like, one of my inner circle, one of my five. We have so many other topics we could touch on, but I wanted to keep it kind of very professional today with your area of expertise. So thank you so much for that, and I look forward to round two.
Thank you for having me on.
There you have it, Orla O'Flaherty on balancing hormones, boosting sex drive, and losing weight. I told you in the introduction, an absolute fire hose of information coming your way in today's episode. So it might be worth re-listening to a couple of times. Just a reminder as well from the top of the podcast of the sponsors for today's episode. Well, not the sponsors, the company that I work with, the affiliate code that I've set up. Let's get checked. So if you want to go get anything tested that we talked about in today's episode, your cortisol, your estrogen, your testosterone, your thyroid function, or vitamins or minerals, even they have everything from sexual sexual health to general men and women's health that you can get tested on. Let's get checked. So the code for that is KEANE30, K-E-A-N-E 30, and that'll give you 30% off your first time order. Full disclaimer, I'm not paid to say how amazing Let's Get Checked are, but I do have an affiliate set up with them as somebody who uses them, so I will earn a commission if you use that code. So go check it out, KEANE30, if you think it'll help, and hopefully you got loads of value from today's podcast with Orla. Go check out her podcast, The Happy Hormones Podcast. Check her out on Instagram, and that's everything from this week. Catch you all next Monday.